Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. It's been going on for almost 45 years now. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we all get together in front of our radios and chat with each other and teach each other, learn from each other, and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay, if you would like to reach me via email, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. We also have a link page, interesting articles, YouTubes, what have you. I see during the week I cut and paste the links and I put it on a page and I publish it for the benefit of all. To get to it, just go over to your browser on your URL and type in roy.ac2gs.com and that will show you the link page. Also, we have a audio stream of the Technical Net. I set it up for the TechNet. Some people asked if I could keep it going the rest of the week, so it's a way for people to listen into the Glen Oaks repeater without a radio. You get to it by typing into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And as always, I like to remind people that MyKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv. And it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've moved out of the area and, unfortunately, those people who have become silent keys over the years. A lot of wisdom in there, and it's still very, very valuable. So if you have a chance, you know, type into your browser, amateurradio.tv, and pull down a file or two and listen to it. It's really good listening. Anyway, let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay. Usual version of our Technical Net, a little preamble with a couple of bits and pieces of artificial intelligence news. Because it's in the paper every day, and it's going to have a dramatic effect one way or the other, either for good or for bad. Time will tell. And then we'll go to the main segment in which we ask people to submit questions or comments or topics of interest. The first few, I would hope, would be amateur radio related, but you can ask anything related to science and technology. Put your name on the list and try and get to you one after the other in a timely manner and not miss anyone. That should take us hopefully to about 10:15, and Paul will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us all the way to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's our plans. If things work the way they're supposed to at the shack and at the repeater, and then I don't get thrown off of All-Star too many times. Usually it's only one or two times a night, and we can handle that. So that's the plan. Let me drop for a sec, and I'll tell you what I got this week about artificial intelligence. Okay, I mentioned last week about a kind of super agent called OpenClaw. I think it should be called OpenClaw. The guy who wrote it supposedly had most of it written by AI, which kind of explains why it has so many flaws. And unfortunately, it's a very powerful but very flawed program. It allows agency for AIs to get into your private stuff. You give it your passwords and your keys, and you can tell it to do things, and it will do them by themselves, so you don't have to handle it. And also, it's a security nightmare, so if you actually do something foolish like that, and someone tries to, and very possibly succeeds, to break into your OpenClaw, it can do everything, too. So if you're foolish enough to give it the keys to the car, then it will it'll steal the car. You know, if you give it your bank accounting information, if you give it your password for your bank account, all those wonderful things it's capable of doing. So do not touch this thing with a 10-foot iPad. It's a lot of danger. Maybe someday when they clean up the security issues, it might be useful or it might not. But right now, it's like asking a mugger to come into the house and take what he'd like and hit you over the head, too, if it was his pleasure. So that's OpenClaw. So you can watch all kind of YouTubes that you want, but for God's sakes, don't install the damn thing. So that's OpenClaw. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. Anthropic had a very good week. They convinced a bunch of people to give them an additional $20 billion of investment money because all these AI organizations are just bleeding money. Elon's XAI bleeds about $1 billion a month, and OpenAI just kind of needs endless feeding. So at least Anthropic seems to be on the top this week. Every so often, you'll see the news stories will talk about who's kind of the in AI organization, and it seems to be Anthropic. Especially the last week or two, they've been dropping a lot of specialized agents, you know, agents for programming, agents for medicine, agents for this, that, and the other thing. And, of course, that kind of had an effect on the stock market. A lot of companies that have software as service that make billions of dollars are concerned that you'll turn away from them and just use these Anthropic plugins. So a lot of those stocks took a big hit. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. A Chinese AI firm released a new AI that shows some promise for some people. The Pentagon seems to be using Anthropic Claude for AI operations, so that's rather scary. And well, there's been a lot of guys kind of leaving organizations. XAI had an exodus of a whole bunch. I think half of the people who started the company decided to resign. It's questionable whether they jumped or Elon pushed them, because a lot of stories are slowly leaking out. And even OpenAI has lost a whole bunch of people. So there's a bit of a tussle going on, once again, in the AI industry, and how it's going to impact all of us has not been completely ascertained. So we'll look forward to telling you about this as it develops over the next few years, hopefully. Anyway, that's pretty much it for AI for tonight. If anyone has any questions or comments about anything that I said, feel free to hit that push to talk.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
You know, we talk about AI in this year of 2026. 80 years ago, February 15th, which is exactly 80 years ago, that was the beginning of ENIAC, the electronic numeral integrator and computer. So, you know, that popped up today. I thought I'd bring that up. That was an amazing machine, and all those years ago, back in the 1940s. And back then they were talking about, well, this thing, you know, this modern computer would get a million tubes in it, be able to, you know, think. And here we are 80 years later talking about the same thing with AI. Back to you, Ron.
Very good. Thank you, Paul. Unfortunately, artificial intelligence is sort of like fusion. Everyone is predicting it in the near future, And they've been predicting it in the near future for probably 80 years, too, fusion. So, that's interesting. A historic moment. An early von Neumann architecture binary computer. Nowadays, we have quantum computers in their experimental phase, and we have some people working with something called an analog as opposed to a binary. But that was the beginning of binary computers, and they used vacuum tubes, and they generated incredible heat, and they created the reason why we call software bugs, you know, because in the early days when the computer crashed, and it wasn't because a vacuum tube failed. Occasionally, it was because an insect got into the electronics, so it was an actual bug at the time, not a software bug back then. So, very good. And Paul, did you notice how good old Elon has kind of segued from Mars onto the moon, and he's still using artificial intelligence as the excuse? He says that the reason why we need to get to the moon and a moon base is to set up industrial production of basically server farms that we will then fling into deep space. So it all seems to go back to AI these days with Elon.
Comment? I read about that. I thought it was, you know, people talking of Elon, you know, their opinions of why he's wants to go from building a base on Mars to a base on the moon. I didn't know that was that came out of Elon's head that he wants to create a database based on the moon. Okay. Well, I think he's realizing that, you know, the moon is relatively close. Mars is like 1,000 times further away than the moon, and, you know, so far we've landed only 12 people on the moon, you know, since the beginning of time. And I think he's starting to realize it's going to be a little bit more difficult to have thousands of starships heading to Mars. And, you know, he's realizing the moon has a better chance. But, yeah, anyway, the ENIAC story, I looked into the past of all these tubes that they had. The amount of heat that was coming off of this building. And it was over in the University of Pennsylvania in Philly. It was really a good step in the right direction. Unfortunately, now I understand that the Weather Bureau wants to pull out a big supercomputer, just junk it, I guess, put it into a big junk pile. That's ridiculous. You know, I guess it's NOAA that's doing it, but they want to pull the plug on that thing. That's where we get all our, no, it's partially where we get all our information on the apps on our phones, you know, for what the upcoming weather, you know, for tomorrow and the next 10 days. So, you know, going from, you know, one world to another world here. And that's not good. Anyway, back to you, Rick.
Yeah, Paul. The problem is this is an anti-science administration, and they're shutting down all kinds of research. I read recently that NASA has a program that the administration's decided to mothball.
Which one?
No, I unfortunately I don't remember which one. It was an expensive one, but I don't remember what. Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, I admit that it's probably slightly easier to build a server farm on the moon than on Mars, but that's really not saying much. The chips that go into the server farm are produced in one single fabrication factory in Taiwan. There's only one of them of a kind. And the silicon that we use to grow these wafers comes from a couple of square miles in the middle of America. There's no other quartz field with high enough purity to manufacture. So the idea that someone's just going to take a pickaxe to the moon and chip away enough raw materials to build a server farm strikes me as somewhat questionable.
Yeah, I don't.
Comment.
I don't know what the materials are for the NVIDIA chip or anything. I just thought it was all galvanized, you know, just making better and smaller transistors. I really haven't read up on that, but yeah, I mean they got to get the material from somewhere. I mean. And you're saying we have it in the United States, so we could dig it out of the ground. And he thinks he's going to dig this stuff out of the moon. Moon's a big place. I wonder where he's going to find it. Back to you.
Yep. Someone wanted to say something?
Yes, KC2, SHO here. Good evening, Roy. And, oh, geez, why am I drawing a blank? Space report, man. I should know better, but drawing a blank. Anyway, you know, if you really want to see the complexity of just one step of the process, watch the kind of recent Veritasium video on the ASM lithography machines. Holy moly, like the most complex machine ever created, and he gives a really good tour of the entire machine, much deeper than I think anyone else has ever had access. Definitely watch it. Highly recommended.
Yeah, I saw it. It's fascinating. I mean, people don't understand. I'll say understand as opposed to appreciate. I think a lot of people, without knowing, appreciate the measures that they go through. You know, the equipment to make, everyone kind of talks about NVIDIA as manufacturing chips. NVIDIA actually doesn't manufacture any chips. It designs chips, and then it sends the design parameters to TSMC in Taiwan, which is the best fabrication company in the world. And they don't make the equipment to fabricate. They buy a lot of the equipment, including the templates that produce the patterns that finally manufacture the chips. And that, I think, is in Sweden or someplace. And those fabrication, photolithography, ultralithography equipment costs hundreds of millions of dollars by itself. So, you know, this is kind of the engine that runs the 21st century. And, you know, God forbid China decided it wanted to take over Taiwan, that would probably be the first building to blow up. And it would take us years to kind of get back to this position. So if anyone has any free time, you know, Google or YouTube, TSMC and high chip fabrication, and it's sort of fascinating, the esoteric involved in manufacturing things that we take for granted that live in our computers and our iPads and all kinds of intelligent machinery that we've collected over the last few years.
Let me make sure I have it. Yeah, and if you want to take it a step further, I read Chip War. Wow, what an eye-opener. Well, the history is really cool, but then when you get into the where it's been recently and where it's going soon and all that, it's a really interesting book. And I've just started reading Breakneck, which is a great way to follow up on it. Breakneck is about the breakneck speed at which China is trying to develop their own lithography machines because they know they can be cut off so easily. Anyway, Real good stuff. Highly recommend the video, the two books, and anything else you can find on the subject. I think people don't realize what a crazy supply chain it is and how easily it could be broken. Hence the CHIPS Act, which fortunately Trump and his cronies haven't axed, probably because somebody realized and said it makes sense. Anyway, JC2SHO Mobile.
Yes, indeed. You know, and it is a war. I mean, it's a war for the future. And the Chinese got burned, you know, when COVID hit. And the anti-Chinese sentiment kind of peaked. You know, they were screwed. They couldn't get state-of-the-art chips. You know, they couldn't certainly ask TSMC over the water in Taiwan. You know, we kind of blocked them for the foreseeable future. And so they did what any massive industrialized country was going to do, and they tried to basically steal the design and if possible, make it even better in the next iteration. So, you know, I mean, they're significantly close to us in robotics. I don't know exactly how we would place them in rocketry, but they're getting things done. So, you know, they're the little guy on the block trying to take control. The Russians are busy getting themselves killed, but the Chinese are attempting to jump over us. So we'll see how that future reads. We have a lot of AI companies here. Chinese have a bunch. I mentioned a new one offering a new AI module. So, yeah, it's neck and neck. We'll see what happens. You know, hopefully no one's going to die or perish from any of this, but we got to keep an eye on it. But thank you, John.
Yeah, real good. Now, I still got a high point here. I'm going to lose you guys soon, but yeah, well, one of the chapters, I think it's chapter 46, and you can find a way to read it online. I found it pretty easy. There was a reader that just brought the book up. And if you find that chapter on the implications of military dominance, wow, it almost, you know, well, not even almost, it's scary. There's a real reason that, you know, beyond just technical dominance, that military dominance will come from whoever wins this war. Catch you later. JC2SHO.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. Okay, we are living in very interesting times. It's both a blessing and a curse. We're living in a golden age of technology. Our understanding and development of things have gone faster and faster and faster. And if you sleep late tomorrow, you'll probably miss some announcement of some breakthrough technology. Anyway, like I said before, a lot of times after I introduce artificial intelligence at the top of the net, we find our way back to it later on, so that might happen. Well, time will tell. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for tonight, please, especially if they are amateur radio related, but we'll take any science and technology topic. If you have any, hit that push to talk, give me your first name, give me your call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or science and technology related.
N2XJN, ham radio related.
Okay, let's recognize if anyone else would like to put their name forth on the list. You know, usually we need more than one or two people. I understand some people arrive late. Some people have distractions at the beginning of the technical net. But if you have a question, comment, or a topic for tonight, it's always good to get your name there on the list as early as you can. Make sure that you don't get missed. Okay. Hopefully, as time goes on tonight, there'll be more people with more questions or comments or topics. You know, last Sunday it was a little on the light side, but that was the Super Bowl. I don't think there's anything of any great consequence happening tonight. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, one last time before we start this segment, if anyone else additionally has any questions, comments, or topics, please hit that push to talk and ID yourself.
K2AJL supporting, no traffic.
Okay, very good. So, Wesley, what do you got for us tonight?
Hey, before I start, I'm not going to make you bored. I've got a few things. Before I start, I have a question in general nature, and I would appreciate if anyone could clarify if I understand the new regulation properly. So, parking a hydrant is now criminal offense, causing jail time. True or false? Second, you have now a chance to be stopped and your license will be not suspended but revoked. As the maximum point for suspension is 6 points, and now you can get 2 times 11 points, so 22 points. And the third question, speeding on construction site is now punished with 8 points, that is 2 points more than suspension, so you're not going to have a license. At least your license will be suspended. Now, does that apply to speeding on a highway or is on the construction zone on the city? If anyone could clarify those three things before I go to the ham radio staff. Okay, it looks like nobody. Okay, so anyhow, I didn't know that in the United States of America, the country of my dream, since I was a very young child, you could become a criminal that easy. Anyhow, there was a ham fest, 13, 14, 15. There was a ham fest in Dighton, in Florida, Orlando, Florida. And I sent you the video from it, but the only one thing that caught my attention, I sent you like an hour ago from now. I sent you the picture of the very strange antenna. It looks like a delta loop for 70 centimeters and 2 meters, but it is actually a ground plane. And it is good for covered operation, or it is good for invisible antenna, covered antenna, if somebody doesn't want that antenna to be seen. It is powered the same way that it's powered, but it's made actually from the wire, so you don't mind to worry to look at the email, look at that picture, it would be okay. So it simulates delta loop, but it's not the delta loop. Back to you, the floor.
Okay, Wes, Paul wanted to say something, and also I wanted to tell you, I looked it up. I'm not really keeping up with New York State laws. It says beginning February 16th, New York State is implementing a major, stricter overhaul of its driver point system, increasing penalties for serious traffic violations and lengthening the violation look-back period to 24 months. Key changes include higher points for speeding, passing school buses, and a new 11-point penalty for DWI and unlicensed driving with a lower suspension threshold of 10 points. Paul, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, first I did hear that they were going to change it And, you know, 11 points, usually that's it. Your license is gone. Yeah, that's one thing I was going to say. The other thing I was going to say is that in New York State, you know, every 3 years you can go for a little, you know, class. It takes about 6 hours. And what it does is they give you all the information of driving, any of the rules, things that have changed. And after 6 hours, you get a reduction on your, you know, on what you pay your insurance company, which is pretty good. You know, I mean, I do it every 3 years, and the person that we had out here, very informative. You get the cam radio questions, you know, they fill you in, you know. There's always a question, you know, can you use your rig in a car? What happens if you hold the mic in your hand? And, you know, they go through all these, all the questions you want. There's plenty of time. But I find it very interesting. So just let Wesley know you can do that. In my case, I go through the library. Different places around the state have it. You can also do it online, from what I understand. Back to you, Ryan.
Okay, very good, Paul. Thank you. To get back, I guess, your final question. You know, it might look like a Delta, but it's not a Delta. It's a kind of, doesn't really look very stable. It's, you know, you could kind of tell that guy, it was screwed around in his garage, and he came up with something, and now he's trying to promote it and make a couple of bucks in his retirement. Doesn't look strong. Isn't particularly a unique design. It's, as you mentioned, it's a ground plane vertical. People have them all over the place. It's, you know, they're one of the most popular varieties. You know, I mean, you can stick one on your car, or you could stick it. You know, you could just take a couple of pieces of hanger wire and configure it, you know, with some ground planes. I don't think it's being terribly special, personally. You know, I mean, I'm sure it gave him hours of fun in his garage trying to figure out how to start a new career at, you know, in his old age. But I don't know. I wasn't impressed, personally.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, well, it's good to put up. I mean, I thought about it. I thought about putting an empty pot, put some flower that is not a flower, it's simulating flower, and then you have inside, and then nobody will think that this is an antenna. Now, this is made. This thing cannot be put on a car because it is made from the wire, so it is meant to be hung. And if you look at the picture, at the traditional point of typical, where typically ground plane is being powered, the thing is being powered, the quadra cable is being connected. So, coming back to what I said before, I do thank you very much, Paul, for explaining all of those regulations. The only what I do not understand is speed on a construction site is now punished with 8 points. Are we talking about driving faster than required on the highway, or are we talking about city? Back to you, Dr. West.
I don't know. I was just kind of telling you the bullet points that I got off of Google.
Okay, so later on, if somebody finds... So if we know that 6 points is to lose the license. I mean, the license is not revoked. It's suspended. And just one ticket for speeding... on construction site, that would be what? Inside construction site, that would be on the street next to the construction site, or that would be highway? That what I do not know. It's 8 points and you do not have a license any longer. I mean, you have a license suspended. Right. Now, the next question is, we have a Harris and Boston Dynamic going to mesh network, and we have a 95% of Ukrainian front on the mesh network from Harris right now. So what I'm saying is, nobody thought that mesh network, radio network, is going to take over. Back to you, Dr. Ray.
Well, one thing, according to Google, the license suspension used to be 11 points, now is 10 points. I don't see anywhere where it says 8 points. So it went down from 11 points to 10 points. And, you know, it's nice to know that people are having an opportunity to war test their technology. You know, recently there's been a significant change in the war since Starlink shut down Russian Starlink devices that were geographically located in Ukraine. So apparently they're going through difficult times, the Russians, trying to figure out a way. They were considering bribing people, threatening threatening Ukrainian prisoners of war, you know, contacting their relatives and saying that if you don't file our Starlinks in Ukraine on the white list, we might torture your son or you know, brother or what have you. So it's nice to know, but you know, this is what military equipment is people want to test it in a wartime environment. So this is a way for them to get a good reputation, and I hope it works for the sake of Ukrainians as opposed to Russians.
Thank you very much for the comment on that. The next one is Federal Communication Commission gave 80,000 of total of fine to the radio station Salem Township, Michigan. That was Velasquez Broadcasting Corporation for not having a fence around the antenna close and for using minimum power instead of the nominal power that was licensed, that the station was licensed for. So the regulation states that you have to have a 95% of the power minimum. 90% of the power that, but not exceeding 105% of the power that you authorize for. If you're transmitting with lower than 90% power because you want to save on energy, you're getting the fine. Okay, so back to you for the comment.
So, okay, I mean, this is an AM broadcast station, so perhaps the FCC knows what it wants. Yeah, I guess they have maps of ranges, and there are some stations that are approved for excessive amounts of power so that they're heard at night across the country. And I guess there's a minimum range as well. And, you know, since they give out the licenses, I guess it's up to them to decide how you can vary the power supply. And apparently, they don't want you to vary it by too much.
Okay. Relativistic Heavy Ion Collider, RHIC, Brookhaven. Remember, Dick was talking about Brookhaven National Lab. February 6, 2026. It was closed forever. It's not going to be in operation any longer. And it's going to take 1 year before the next one will be open. Back to you.
Okay, so I mean, this is the nature of search and technology, especially at the bleeding edge. CERN was closed for improvements as well. It's not a sad story. It's an ultimately long-term good story. It'll come back as something else that is more capable of, more functional than the previous one. So, I mean, that's just the nature of things. You know, it's not like telescopes where we kind of leave them and just build another one in some other place. We usually decommission them, take them partially apart, retrofit them, put new parts in that are higher power or designed for a slightly different examination of the nature of particles and such. So, again, I don't take that as a sad story. It's a part of the growing nature of our technology and our research into these technologies. You need more powerful, stronger equipment as you progress. You can't kind of stay with the same old bit of equipment and, God forbid, just turn it into a museum piece. So it's good news. It's not bad news.
Comment.
Certainly.
Another way to think about it is, something like a telescope is going to be a fairly simple piece of engineering where something like an accelerator or a synchrotron is live science. They're trying to figure out how to do something new constantly with that same piece of equipment.
You're kind of generating a lot of background noise, unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, this is an ongoing thing. I mean, if you look at accelerators, it's very common for them to be taken offline and adjusted and modified for either stronger power or a slightly different range of particle inspections and such. It's part of the nature of nuclear science and advancement. There are some pieces of equipment that can be left behind and still do great research in optics like astronomy, but when it comes to the things that these theoretical physicists are thinking up, you need them to be more powerful and, to change over time. So, again, it's the progress of science and technology and developing or retrofitting or repurposing old tools to assist in the research of future experiments, not past ones.
Much more eloquently stated. KC2SHO, go ahead, Ray.
Thank you, John. Wesley, what can I tell you? That's the nature of this type of research. As I said before, even the big accelerator in Switzerland had to be taken offline to have it upgraded. So, I mean, if it's good enough for CERN, it should be good enough for them.
Well, there is a significant difference. First of all, this one is not going to be upgraded. It's closed for it. That stuff is going to go somewhere, or it's going to be sold, or it's going to be disassembled and thrown to the garbage. And America, United States of America, doesn't have a second one. That was the only one. Now, important. Many people understand the word heavy ion. So that was heavy ion collider. If you don't mind to say a few words, what is heavy ion? what is iron and what is heavy iron that we use.
Okay, ions are atoms that are missing at least one electron, so they are charged. They are not electrically neutral. So, you know, if you take a hydrogen and you knock an electron off of it, you basically just have a proton. But you know, any other, you know, sodium, you knock an electron out, you have an ion. So any atom that's no longer electrically neutral, that has one or more electrons pulled off of their outer shell, are ions, and you know, it's one of the many things that you can rev up in an accelerator and have them collide with each other, and you then examine what particles are freed from that collision. The more energy that you rev up the two atoms, the two ions, the more interesting the types of particles that come into creation, equals mc squared. So, and part of the energy is not just you know, not just the velocity, but you know, the momentum, you know, energy containing. So that's what an ion collider is.
Okay, so we could have not enough electrons, so we can have more electrons. Then we have the cations and ions. Cation and ions, right? Not onions, ions, right? Not a chemist. I mean particle physics. But anyhow, which is actually what I'm saying. Thank you very much for that. And now I have some sort of puzzle. It's not a puzzle, it's just a question that usually people don't think to ask. So there was an 8-year-old son of an educator, and he asked a question: what gave rotational power to the moon? Someone is cruising around the Earth. What gave initial rotational power to the moon? That was the first question. And that's the question to Roy and Paul. The second question is, why this speed is sort of fixed? So something gave rotational power, made the moon rotating around the Earth. And I'm telling you that if you or Paul say it's a gravity, you might not be right. Or you might say just a part of the story. And the second question was, is moon going to fly away? And is it slowly showing that year after year? Is it showing that it's going to fly away? And the, another question was, is that perpetual motion? And of course it is not. But then the question is, because this is not a perpetual motion, so we assume that this is not a perpetual motion, energy comes from the Earth. Can we measure the amount of energy used by moon cruising around the Earth, and what units do we use for that? This 8-year-old child. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Well, I
lost count. I want to comment about the collider.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to mention in passing that The ions that are being used in Brookhaven were hydrogen. They knocked the electron off, and basically they were flinging protons through it. And supposedly they're going to build another device. So, you know, like I said, it may not be exactly for the same purpose, but, you know, Brookhaven only has so much space. They can't start building other accelerators on top of old ones. So, Paul, please.
Yeah, the new one is the EIC. They want to make it the electron ion collider. But going back to the history of this thing, and you said they keep, you know, changing things over time. Right now, you have the RIC program, the relativistic heavy ion collider, and before that, it was called ISABEL. I forgot what the acronym for that was, but what that acronym stood for. And ISABEL morphed into the RIC program. ISABEL never took off. They realized that over time they didn't need that anymore, but they went directly to the RIC program. And it's weird because in my working days I was out there doing piping for the ISABEL project, and then some years later I went back with a different contractor doing some more piping, heating, and air conditioning for one of the areas in the RIC program. And it's a 2.5 mile ring. You know, if you drive out there, it's just, you know, it's like half on the ground and half above ground. And so that ring, of course, never changes. And now that's going to, last I heard, it's going to change into the electron ion collider. You know, and yeah, it is shut down. It was shut down a couple of few days ago. No more RIC. But yeah, they change from one thing to another. You know, come back another 10, 20, 30 years from now, they might change the electron ion collider to something else. Back to you, Roy. WS2N.
Okay, very good, Paul. Thank you very much. Getting back to that really long question, Wes, you got to kind of break these things into little pieces, because if you ask me 15 things in one question, I don't really remember 15 things. Basically, the moon is moving slowly away from us. It has slowed down until it's become tidally locked. But again, as it slowly gets farther and farther away from the Earth, that tidal locking will kind of change the rotation of the moon. And nothing's a perpetual motion, and it's not kind of... It's basically based on tidal locking, and also the fact that angular momentum is preserved. The solar system was made out of a whole bunch of bits and pieces, and each of and every piece had its own angular momentum, and when it coalesced, it added its angular momentum to other pieces, and that's why everything is spinning. As far as I'm aware, there's no planetary object that's just sitting there quietly, not moving. Everything has angular momentum, any large object. Has angular momentum in our solar system.
Okay, into extreme. Well, not quite. You're talking about the tidal acceleration. Tidal acceleration does not require rotation of orbital bodies. Simple like that. So, what you said is in conflict with what I said. But I'm sure that I'm right in this, because I can read it from the scientific article. The question was, what gave initial power, initial rotation to the moon, orbiting around the Earth? Now, yes, 3.8 millimeter is the distance
every year from the moon is more far away from the Earth, and so sooner or later it's going to go by itself. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
Tidal locking does not require angular momentum, but if it occurs, it achieves a stable angular momentum. So I didn't say it has to, but tidal locking will maintain angular momentum when the lock kind of kicks in.
Okay. So we have synchronous rotation, we have gravitational torque, we have initial spin, and we have bodies. There are two bodies, it's Earth and Moon. The Sun would be able to give us some light on it. What gave initial rotation to the Moon? Paul, if you don't mind, to take to say something, Andrea.
Well, it actually rotates, what, every 27 and a third days, right? So, I mean, is that the rotation you're talking about? Even so, it's always looking at the Earth. I mean, it actually does a 360, you know, once a month. You know, if that's the rotation you're talking about, what, I mean, originally it had regular rotation, you know, and that eventually slowed down to, until it came into a tidal lock situation, which we're in now.
Thank you very much for that. I did not for that. It's 27.3 days. Why is it rotating? Well, so the one question is, why is it rotating? Tidal 4 doesn't require rotation. Tidal acceleration does not require rotation or orbiting bodies. So that's not an explanation. Why is it rotating? That's the first question. Second question is, what gave the Moon initial rotation?
Well, I mentioned that at the beginning. Angular momentum is conserved, and all particles have some degree of angular momentum. So when objects kind of merge together, it doesn't negate their angular momentum. It's some angular momentum is conserved. That's why everything on this solar system spins and rotates. You know, nothing sits there stationary.
Angular momentum is conserved, but it has to come from something. Something is cruising around something faster and slower. Why? Back to you.
Because this solar system was made up initially of gases and particles and rocks that fused together into mostly our sun and our planets and satellites and other rocks that were outside of our orbit collided with the proto-Earth and spit out a piece of crust which developed into the Moon. Things move around. You know, different things are conserved and not conserved. So kinetic energy, is conserved. Something that kind of moves up and down and all around, gravitational fields will kind of fix it within a plane. But angular momentum is conserved and isn't going to just kind of run out of steam. You have to apply an opposing angular momentum to stop it from spinning, which is what happened to the Moon until it reached a low enough velocity that it became tidally locked with the Earth, that now maintains it at this speed and will maintain it at this speed for a long time. But as I said, eventually, because it's slowly going farther and farther away from the Earth, eventually it will lose that lock. But that's why everything in the solar system has a non-zero angular momentum.
We're not talking about non-zero angular momentum or zero angular momentum. We asking.